Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 12th. I'm Ray Graff. You wanted it. You got it. The Birdman is back. Rich Guthrie has soared back to Studio A for today's program to share his birding expertise and answer your birding questions. To take part in today's birding discussion, give us a call, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551, the number. If you want to talk about birding with a guy who knows a lot about birding, it's 800-348-2551. Did I mention the birding? You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Rich Guthrie and your birding questions coming up on a birding edition of Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today, and when we do that, we bring back Rich Guthrie. We keep him over in the side behind the building in a little shed, and we bring him up every couple of weeks or so for a program. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. If you have a question about birds, I urge you to call now, 800-348-2551. When Rich is on, the lines get loaded, and by the end of the show, you will not be able to get in. 800-348-2551. You can tweet us at WAMCVoxPop or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome back to the program.
Hello again. Glad to be here.
I had a sighting. Oh, did I have a bird sighting?
A bird sighting.
I was out front playing my usual round yesterday afternoon of Count the Subarus.
Uh-huh.
And because it's a public radio station, there are a lot of Subarus.
Yes.
And I was, my attention was drawn to the little tree to the side on the sidewalk. A little tree. And there was a woodpecker. But it wasn't the usual woodpecker we see around our neighborhood. This was a little guy.
Mm-hmm.
White and black, had a little bit like a red, like a yarmulke on the back of his head.
Yep.
What was that?
Well, that's the little downy woodpecker.
Ah, is
There's
that common?
There's two of those. Yeah, they're actually, the friendly little backyard woodpecker.
Yeah.
There's two of those with the checkerboard pattern on the back, the black and white checkerboard.
Yeah.
The downy woodpecker and the hairy woodpecker. They look almost identical to one another, except one is larger than the other.
And I showed you the picture, and you think that's a downy.
Oh, yeah. Most the downy is more the expected one. The hairy woodpecker is more reclusive. It's more into the deeper, thicker woods than the fringes and city parks and backyards.
I got to tell you, I've worked here 22 years, and I've never seen a woodpecker out of
that
tree.
Well, it's not exactly happy woodpecker habitat out there.
Yeah.
I mean, the occasional street side tree.
Was he lost, or was he up at the OTB and took a break?
Moving around, checking out winter quarters. The little red patch on the back of the head tells us that it was a male.
Ah, very
interesting. The female is the same thing without the red patch.
Well, I tell you, that was a new one on me, and I have pledged to, anytime I see a rare bird like that.
Around, a rare bird like that, a picture.
I'll get a picture and show you.
And you see, it worked.
You made my day, I made your day. It's very exciting.
Now, speaking of woodpeckers, we have something like 8 different kinds of woodpeckers in the listening area.
Yeah.
And, from the downy and the hairy, which we mentioned, and then the red belly and the red-headed. The pileated and the flicker. The pileated is a big woody woodpecker.
That is a great one to see.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Yep.
And then the sapsucker, which doesn't really, since they rely on the flow of sap in the tree.
They're gone for
They're kind of like out of here.
Yeah.
And then up north in the Adirondacks and up in the northern parts of the Vermont listening area, we have the two three-toed woodpeckers.
Three-toed?
Three-toed. No. Count them. And the black.
How many toes do they usually have?
Well, they usually have 4.
Okay.
But these have 3.
Why?
I don't know.
Are they mutant? They're,
just kind of like checked it out. They don't need that extra baggage.
So right.
They get along fine. So there's the two three-toed woodpeckers up there.
Right. Oh, that's great.
Deep in the heart of the Adirondacks and the Northeast Kingdom and Vermont.
Now, when you see a woodpecker spending any reasonable amount of time on a tree, that tells you the tree is in some distress?
Not necessarily, especially with the downy woodpecker. The downy woodpecker is looking around for little nits to pick at in between these interstices of the bark.
Hmm.
Spider eggs, little crawling insects that have found their way to the edge of the tree. But it's something like the pileated woodpecker, he's kind of the tree surgeon of the family.
The big one.
He goes in there and digs deep.
And they
that's
like
for food.
And they like stumps as well. I know my brother had a tree stump on his driveway.
Right.
And this pileated woodpecker, he didn't care. We would walk right by him, and he was hanging out. He was there for days.
They find a food source, and it's kind of like hard to deter them.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here. We're talking birds on Vox Pop today, and we go to Susan in Western Massachusetts. Susan.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I've been trying to get in the last couple times Rich has been on the line. I've had a pileated woodpecker feeder out for 2.5 years, and I have never seen a pileated woodpecker come to it. Do they need special food?
No, that's typical of them. And it is, the pronunciation pileated is correct either way. It depends on where you're all from. And it works both ways. I grew up with pileated. A lot of people call them pileated. It's potato, potato type of thing.
Yeah. Let's call the whole thing off.
So they kind of like, they're more reclusive than the other woodpeckers. Once they do find a backyard feeder, then you've got a big friend in your yard. But it's not usual. They're not drawn to yards. They're more of a remote bird. But I've seen them in city streets.
Oh.
I've seen them come up close. But
I have friends in Pittsfield, and they have them like in their yard. And
right.
I'm in the country. I'm in Hinsdale, and I'm next to woods with lots of dead trees.
Yes.
So, and that's why I can't believe I haven't seen one as a feeder.
It's not you, believe me. It's all on them. So and thanks for trying, and good luck. If they do find you, you'll be best friends.
There's no way to attract them.
No,
okay.
I mean, it's all entirely up to their finding you.
Well, Susan, thank you very much for the call. Rich Guthrie is our guest, 800-348-2551. It occurs to me, I always used to say pileated, and you every time someone says pileated, you always say, you know, there's two ways to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And so clearly you prefer pileated.
That's the way I grew up. It's where I'm from.
I like pileated.
Well, there you go.
But you see, every
Hang
time I
it.
Say that, you say, well, there are two, it's okay that you say it this way. But all right, let's go to Bruce in Brunswick. Bruce, you're on.
Here's my question, gentlemen. I go through about 1,000 pounds a year of seed.
Wahoo.
Am I raising lazy birds? Are they like children? If you keep giving them everything, they're never going to go on out and forage on their own?
That's a good question.
Yeah, they'll be fine. They'll be fine.
Are you sure?
Absolutely. Listen, they're looking for the easy way out. They got it. But if you stop, they'll make it on their own. So.
I love that, though. You know, you got the bird, 23 years old, sitting on the couch watching TV. Got a job, you know?
Yeah, right. Give me another one. Go get me another sunflower seed.
But presumably, Bruce.
Follow-up question.
Go ahead.
Yesterday afternoon, I saw a couple of red-winged blackbirds. Now, most everything else has been out of this region for some time. Are they coming down from farther north?
It could be. The question about red-winged blackbirds and grackles and some of the other, I like to call them leapfrog migrants. The ones that we have here head south. The ones up north come down here and then will continue on. But then there's that small segment of the bunch that just kind of don't go away.
Mm.
They're here in the summer. They're here in the winter. It's hard to tell one from the other because they all look alike. And
Hey, this one had its full breeding colors on.
Sure. It's an adult male, and it doesn't matter which it is, the adults or the young. Most often, it's the young that stick around, but and when they do, they tend to group up in small flocks, 6 or 8 or 10, not much more than that. But if you get into a favorable area down in the Connecticut River Valley or down in the lower Hudson River in New York, you can run into flocks of 100 to 500 at a favorable marshy location.
Don't want to feed them.
Bruce, thanks for the call. You know, getting back to Bruce's original question, he said he goes through 1,000 pounds of bird seed.
That's a lot of bird seed.
Okay. How many years? Say Bruce lived to be 200, and he did that and he fed the birds extensively every day. At what point do the birds then not learn to go out on their own?
Well, you know, there's some there's been some discussion of that. And so there's we have a list of different southern birds that have made their way northward.
Yeah.
And there are some experts out there that are attributing some of that movement to backyard bird feeding, such as the cardinal and the like. Some of the other bird species. I don't think it fits well. Because the non-backyard bird feeder birds like turkey vulture have moved in without any enticement like that. But sure, some of our birds have become very urbanized over time. The house sparrow and the starling and the pigeon, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And the others are adapting well. In fact, the pileated or pileated woodpecker.
I prefer pileated.
I heard.
Yes.
And they've actually become a little more accustomed to being around people.
Yep.
Not so much urban areas, but more suburban areas. But in the past, they were strictly remote birds.
They're great birds to see. Let's take a break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's birds today on the program. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Lines are loaded at the moment, and you know, you should wait and you hear somebody hang up. That's when you call. Rich, you got a list of good things to talk about.
Lots of things going on out there.
All right.
Run down the list. First of all, we'll start with the program that I will be presenting.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's at the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club's annual get-together in December 2nd at Five Rivers Environmental Education Center.
Yeah.
December 2nd. And that's where we get together and talk about things, winter and birds and Christmas bird counts and lots of camaraderie.
When is this?
December 2nd.
And where?
Five Rivers Environmental Education, Del Mar, New York.
Do you need an opening act? I could work up some badger humor or something and, you know, birds and badgers and Guthrie.
I'd like to see that. Let's do it.
All right. Well, talk to my agent. What else you got?
And then for those seeking warmer climes during the winter and helping a great environmental cause, Birds Caribbean will be taking another trip to Cuba this coming up in March.
No way.
Birdscaribbean.org. See the birds of Cuba with a wonderful group of people.
Will they be running afoul of federal authorities going
not
there?
Not at all.
Okay.
In fact, people who join to go on that thing will be totally cleared and good to go.
Okay.
And then we have a lot of other stuff going on there.
All right.
The John Bowes Natural History Society will be having their annual get-together at the Hudson River Maritime Museum down in Kingston, New York. That's on November 14th.
Right.
The Sawmill River Audubon will be doing a bird walk on November 18th to the Rockefeller State Park Preserve.
Okay.
Sawmillriver.audubon.
All right.
Whatever. Mearns Bird Club, mearnsbirdclub.org, November 16th, Southern Orange County, New York, and then on November 23rd, Eastern Orange County, New York, the various lakes and thereabouts, looking for things.
Okay.
Bedford Audubon Society down in the Hudson River Valley on November 16th. There's going to be a leader's choice. We don't know where they're going, neither do they, but they'll find out and let you know by then.
They don't know.
Well, we'll be right up until the last minute.
Wandering around Bedford.
The best of the birds on November 16th.
All right.
And then the this is important. This is the fifth annual Berkshire Natural History Conference. This is going to be at Williams College on what I want you to do is check out with the Williams College and the Berkshire Natural History Conference. That's
okay.
A get-together of people who care about all those things from birds and beyond in Berkshire County of Massachusetts. And then a few others. We'll make it down the list here.
All right.
That's on November 16th, coming up on Saturday the 16th, or this weekend.
All right.
Then the Hampshire Bird Club will be going to the Chris Ellison Memorial Reservoir at East Quabbin in Massachusetts. Hampshire Bird Club, November 16th. And Boxborough Bird Club will be going to Nagag Hill in Acton.
Nagog.
Nagog Hill, Boxborough Bird Club, boxboroughbirders.org. And then one more over in Worcester, Massachusetts, the Forbush Bird Club, Salisbury State Park and Parker River National Wildlife Refuge. November 16th at 8 o'clock in the morning. That's the Forbush Bird Club.
Salisbury Steak Park? I got to go to that place. That sounds delicious.
Hey, food served at the, after dinner.
Oh, my gosh.
And then the Hartford Audubon Society over in Connecticut is a couple of shorebirds profiled by Wayne Peterson is doing a program on shorebirds on November 19th at 7 p.m. HartfordAudubon.org.
All right.
That's the list of things coming up.
And your big event, your live performance at Five Rivers?
December 2.
Okay, man. All right.
At 7 p.m. at Five Rivers, just west of Albany.
All right. Before we get back to the phones here, a few emails, and we'll start out with a game we like to call Bird Brain here on the program, in which our brainiac birdman attempts to identify a sound. Now, Anne sent us this recording of a bird and is hoping Rich can identify it. She says it's a three-note call. This is your first clue. It's a three-note call and was heard several times this summer. Are you ready?
Ready to go.
Zach, hit it.
Ooh.
Okay. You got a good idea on that?
I sure do.
All right.
I wish I could follow up with a question on that. Is the habitat that this was? I'm going to suggest it was a marsh, a cattail marsh.
All right.
And in the background there, we heard a least bittern.
A rarity?
Or the other sound alike to that, it would be from the edge of a thick woods, and that would be the black-billed cuckoo. But that's not the cuckoo. That's the least bittern.
Let's hear it one more time, Zach. Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the least bittern on that.
All right, we'll find out on that.
And, which is a very secretive bird. And you only hear it at the very early edges of dawn. Mm. Usually nocturnal, crepuscular.
What was that word?
Crepuscular.
That's great. Yeah. This one's from Kim. I'm seeing more robins this late fall than in years past. Any idea why?
They're gathering up to spend the winter as a group or will continue flying south. Yeah, these are the guys that are probably coming in from Canada. Will likely continue on. But if you have a lot of fruity trees or shrubs in your neighborhood, they'll be there.
All right. This one says, could you talk for a minute about the roosting behavior with crows? I've noticed it a couple of times recently. It seems like there are thousands of them flying across town. What is the behavior and where are they during the day versus the night? And that's from Paul.
Well, crows are very gregarious during the winter months. They gather sometimes in huge flocks. It's very spectacular to watch them see coming in from various directions, points on the compass.
Yeah.
During the day, they head out to the cornfields and wheat fields and out in the countryside. But they all gather up together in a communal roost, much to the chagrin of the local people who park underneath that particular tree.
All right, this one's from Amber. My 2-year-old son spends a lot of time outside looking at all different types of birds. Can you recommend a good visual guide for Massachusetts or New England birds for a toddler?
Wow. What I will suggest is if visual will work, go to online, go to Cornell University's website, and there'll be a whole list of resources on there, Cornell University Lab of Ornithology.
Do they have bird flashcards?
We used to. You know, when I was a kid, I used to have these little packets of, like, baseball cards.
Yeah.
And actually, I think they came in the back of cigarette packages.
Of course they did.
Yeah, of course.
Because, I mean, kids love birds and smoking, right? Of course. All right. This is from Bob in West. Thanks for that, Rich. This is from Bob in West Hurley, and then we'll jump back on the phones. I recently saw a peacock with three turkeys in a neighborhood yard. I saw the neighbors last week and showed them a picture that I took. They said the peacock comes regularly with the turkeys for the last year and a half. The peacock probably left a local property where I see them in their yard. But do turkeys normally flock and travel with any other species?
Sure.
Yeah,
they're what can you say? They're glorious chickens for the most part, and they, you know, you mix and match chickens and hens and fowl and all that.
Glorious.
So they get along fine.
I gotta start writing this stuff down. Glorious chickens. That's a great name for a band. Mark in Stone Ridge. Mark, you're on.
Hi, Rich. Love your program.
Hi.
I have a couple of questions, and one is about a Kestrel box I put up about 10 years ago, and it's been successful, but it's in the middle of a cornfield on a utility pole, and I only put wood chips in the box. I was wondering what's the best medium, and I have another question also.
Well, the problem is not so much the box or the contents of the box. I think it's more or less the availability of Kestrels themselves. They've actually had a terrible hit numerically. The population has crashed.
Do we know why?
Not sure.
Okay.
And I will say that probably is not having to do with habitat. There's plenty of suitable habitat and nesting locations. They like old woodpecker holes and nesting boxes. I know we have a nest box on the Coxsackie grasslands. The Kestrels, they come in every year, they have a look at it, and then they go down to the beaver swamp where they find another place they like better.
Okay.
It works, the preferences. So as far as the furnishings inside a Kestrel nest box, wood chips is fine, and in fact, I don't think they're that particular. Screech owls are more particular. They would like to see pine needles or the like inside a box, but the Kestrel's not so much. I don't think that's a major factor.
Mark, you said you had another question.
Yes, I have a Martin house that I clean out in September, and I've always had great success with them. But I've always find parasites in the box. I was wondering what I was planning on doing, and let me know if you think this would work, is the boxes are about 6x6. I was going to put diatomaceous earth in there with a very thin board of, like Luan, a very thin piece of plywood, so the birds aren't actually on that diatomaceous earth, because the fleas always seem to be under the nest, and I thought this would at least chill them and not bother the birds.
Well, that's what I was going to suggest, something along those lines. Now, the New York Bluebird Society has been very active in researching ways of keeping parasites off nestling birds, and they recommend diatomaceous earth, which is basically it's a calcium not crystal but exoskeleton from diatoms, and apparently it is very irritable to the parasites, but harmless to the birds.
Hmm.
It's non-toxic. It's just kind of like a dusting powder. So I would go with your thoughts there and work on that. And congratulations on a successful purple martin nest colony. They're so scarce. They're so few and far between. I would encourage you, if you don't mind, is to enter that onto eBird. So that we'll have a record of where the locations are. You can conceal the location if you prefer. There's ways of doing that. But at least the record will be in there so that we can track the comings and goings, the population activity within the purple martins and other bird species.
And how does Mark find eBird?
eBird.org.
One other thing. I was asking for help. I've been volunteering for over 10 years at Ulster Community College, the Bluebird Houses, and I'm moving on, and I'm looking for someone that I would show them the ropes. There are about 15 Bluebird Houses. It's our state bird, and I was wondering if somehow they could contact you, and I could contact you.
That's a good way to go about it. Yeah,
I would do that. And also, I strongly encourage you to contact the John Burroughs Natural History Society there in Ulster County, New York, primarily in Kingston, New York. And I'm sure you'll find a lot of listening ears in that group.
Okay.
I'm very appreciative to that effort that you put on.
But he can feel free to email you.
Oh, absolutely. My email, richardpguthrie@gmail.com. Anytime.
All right. Let's go to James in Smallwood. James, you're up.
Hey, guys. I'm really quite stupefied here. I called in three quarters of an hour ago, or a half hour ago, about the fact that I'd recently set up a bird feeder that's been totally ignored by all the birds in my neighborhood. Of course, it snowed overnight. But a little while ago, a woodpecker came in and began to peck at it. And now I've got, just in the course of the last half hour, about 10 birds around the bottom of my bird feeder.
Wow.
So well, it's kind of miraculous.
Yeah, there you go. Well, they probably listening to the program and said, hey, free lunch.
Right.
Well, my question is, to what extent are birds able to live in a vicinity, and when there are changes in their environment, like the setting up of a bird feeder, do they notice it? Like, why?
Well, they watch one another.
About a week.
Yeah. You mentioned the woodpecker came in. They were watching that woodpecker, and the woodpecker was watching them. It works back and forth in both ways. So the and when they see somebody scoring, they're heading over that direction.
Yeah.
Check it out. That's why you get some strange birds at bird feeders that really have no interest in what's in there.
Well, now there's a chipmunk as well.
Yeah, right. Well,
it's like Dr. Doolittle's house. Good for you.
Okay, well, that's great to know. Thanks.
Right, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's birds today, and Anita is in Clinton. Anita.
Hi, Rich. I've heard a bird I can't identify twice this summer, and it's a I would say a high ringing sound, and I wondered if it could be a turkey. It's very forceful. It's loud, like.
Cool.
I can't really reproduce it, but it's kind of like a bell, a ringing bell, but a little bit lower.
Huh? Because castrati turkey, perchance? No.
Okay, that's between you two. I'm going to go back.
No, what is it, Rich? You heard a perfect. You heard perfectly what it is.
You know, I kind of like what first comes to your mind, and that being a turkey.
Yeah.
I can't say I recognize it from your imitation.
Oh my gosh!
But I will go along with that.
Anita,
know,
do it again.
Instincts.
One more time, Anita.
No, I'm wondering.
I thought you did pretty good for a turkey.
Can you do a turkey, Rich?
There you go. Ray, you're on.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
No, this is more like a bell.
Like a what?
A bell.
Very tuneful.
Really?
That can't be a turkey, right?
No, I'm stumped. Now, you say you heard this during the summertime?
Twice, once in the mid-morning, once in the afternoon.
It wasn't your phone.
And there's a lot of fields and, you know, hedgerows and a wide creek, that kind of
I'm going to mull this over.
Okay.
And see if I can come up with something, or maybe somebody out there.
And that sound is now gone, Anita? You haven't heard it recently?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Too bad. We get a recording of that.
I like turkey.
Yeah, and especially this time of year.
Okay.
Right.
Well, Anita,
thank you.
Sorry Rich couldn't help you. We apologize for Rich's inadequacy in this instance.
Ditto likewise.
Hillary in Sheffield, you're up.
Hi, Rich. Thanks a lot. I saw a peregrine, I'm almost sure, 90% sure, along the Schoharie Creek up in the area of Hunter. I was on my way to Westkill. And I just want to check in with you. I mean, I recognize the falcon-type wings swept back, the point, it was gray. It was flying over water, which doesn't seem that natural. But can you tell me anything about the peregrines in the Catskills, if there are any?
Yeah, there are, in fact. Peregrine falcon, you know, the old name before it became more politically correct was duckhawk. And that one would be flying out over the water just makes sense.
Sure, of course. Yeah.
They do nest in the Catskills. You get some of these cliff faces on the Catskill Mountains. And, the peregrine has made a remarkable comeback since the efforts to reintroduce them after they'd been decimated a few decades ago. Now they're back and they're in fairly healthy numbers. They nest on almost every bridge on the Hudson River Valley. And much to the pleasure of the bridge maintenance people, because they keep the pigeons away for a good part.
Yeah.
And they nest on, like I say, on some of the cliff faces in the Catskill Mountains and the Schwangunks and elsewhere. So it's not unusual. And they like to hunt out over open areas because they are a bird of direct flight with incredible speed.
Mm.
And so it gives him plenty of opportunity to open up and go after it.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, that's a great sighting.
Now, what eagles do we have in the Northeast, specifically in Connecticut?
We have, actually, in Connecticut, it'd be more likely be the bald eagle. Okay. But we do also have the golden eagle.
Are there any that are black?
Yeah, they will appear black. The young bald eagle and the adult golden eagle will both look black against a light, a backlit sky.
Well, the reason I asked, my wife and I went out to Mohegan Sun a couple weekends ago. We were on the 15th floor of
How'd you do?
Steely Dan played. It was pretty good.
You saw an eagle.
We sat at our 15th floor window and looked at these birds just in the updraft and just circling around and having a great time. They were huge. Yeah. We weren't sure if they were black hawks or whatever.
Turkey vultures.
I don't know.
Yeah.
They had pointy beaks.
Well, they got pointy beaks.
Yeah? Yeah. They were having fun.
Yeah. And when you mentioned soaring, circling Connecticut.
Yeah.
Turkey vultures.
All right. Fair enough. Well, we know they didn't lose that weekend. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's birds today, 800-348-2551. Still stinging from his inability to identify Anita's castrato turkey imitation. Rich, I want to put you in a better mood. We got an email here from Anne. Mm-hmm. We had played Anne's audio cut earlier, and she writes us back. Okay, got on my Audubon app. Definitely sounds like a black-billed cuckoo recording there.
There you go.
You see? You can't win them all, but you win a lot of them. We're proud to have you here for the most part. Let's go to Betty in Albany. Betty, you're on.
Oh, hi. I want to report a close encounter with a very large bird last week. I live in Albany near Berkshire Pond. And one morning last week, I was getting into my car, and all of a sudden, whoosh, over the top of my head, this bird lands on my neighbor's awning over his front door, which was about 8 feet away. And I looked at it, ooh, and it stared at me for a few seconds, or about 5 seconds, yeah. And then it took off. And from what I could gather, from the, it looked like it was a red-tailed hawk to me. It was big. I mean, each leg was probably 8 inches long. You know, from where it met the body to its talons.
That's huge.
And I could catch a little bit of yellow on its beak. Mm-hmm. And it was mostly white underneath with some really nice reddish brown markings. And and when it flew away, it was like really fast. You know, it was just dynamite.
Wow. Rich, what do you think?
Yeah.
Well, I like your thought when you mentioned red-tailed hawk. Continuing mm-hmm. down that path, there's a since you mentioned also Berkshire Pond or Buckingham Pond?
Buckingham Pond, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
Well, yeah, it's on Berkshire Road.
Yep, yeah. Right. Okay, very cool. I'm going to suggest perhaps it was a red-shouldered hawk that will have some vermiculations of reddish coloration onto it. And they're fairly large. They're not huge. They're actually smaller than a red-tailed hawk. But they are more colorful. The red-tailed hawk, mm-hmm. as the name suggests, does have a brick-red colored tail on the adult. The other possibilities with long legs like that might be something like a Cooper's hawk, which is smaller yet. But it could look large.
It looked to me like it was about probably 16 inches from head to tail.
Okay.
Well, the body.
Right. Well, a visual estimation like that will probably fit both red-shouldered and Cooper's hawk. Mm-hmm. So a few more details in, let's say, the pattern on the tail or the facial pattern and the like might tell it too. But, you know, they look remarkably similar. Being as they're two different genera apart.
Are they both common around here?
They're both here.
Yeah.
Neither one is common.
Mm.
So, and it's not unusual for them to be in a urban setting.
And land on an awning?
Land on an awning. It just happens to be the place where they put
them. I kind of thought it might have been after my hair, you know, because I wear my hair in a bun. Maybe it thought it was a squirrel or something.
Not to worry.
No.
I think you're safe there.
But definitely don't wear a squirrel on your head, Betty. Just don't do that around the neighborhood now.
No, never again. No. Nope.
Right, well,
okay.
Thank you very much.
So, yeah, I would go with either one of those two possibilities. A few more details to separate which one from the other.
That's a great sighting, though. I mean,
In
the city, it's fun.
Yes, yes. And either one of them would like a habitat such as a pond edge.
Yeah.
Like that. In fact, the red-shouldered hawk is mainly feeds on frogs and salamanders and snakes and the like.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's great.
He's going to have to move south before long.
Well, good for Betty. John and Kanan. John, you're up.
Rich, I need some advice for my wife, who is worried about putting out, if she puts out bird feeders now, she may... because of the warm fall that we've had, still be in danger of attracting bears. We live way out in the country. There mm-hmm. are a lot of bears up on the mountainsides behind the house. What's a safe time to put out bird feeders?
I would say we're getting to there now, especially if you're at a higher elevation. Canaan, New York, mm-hmm. over in Rensselaer County, New York. I think it's probably safe to go with them now. The cold weather that we've had, especially that snow overnight, I'm sure we'll mm-hmm. convince most of the bears it's time to go to bed. But if we do have a warm spell, some of them just like to get up and look around for a snack before. Yeah. And
so if it heats up, take in the bird feeders.
Yeah, they won't go into a deep slumber and potentially could wander about a little bit more before the real winter sets in. So this is just a test drive.
All right. Hey, John, thanks and good luck. We appreciate the call. Over to Ann in Southfield, Massachusetts. Ann, you're up.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Excellent. So I have two questions. The first one is, I have a phoebe nest that is on top of an outdoor light fixture, and I've left it there for 2 years because I don't want to make my phoebe homeless. But on the other hand, I kind of like to reclaim the light fixture. So I was wondering, is that an okay thing to do, or will she only go back to that nest? And if I get rid of the nest, like I've killed generations of phoebes.
Negative. You'll be good. You can go ahead and take it away. The
excellent.
Yeah, and that's housekeeping. It's not collecting. There's a big difference between the two.
Yeah.
Go ahead and do that. And most birds.
I appreciate it.
Yep. Most birds actually like to build a new nest. It's part of the pair bonding. So.
Well, we've had a phoebe nest up under our overhang by right behind some outdoor speakers I have in the mm-hmm. backyard. And they come back every year to that same
nest.
I don't touch the nest.
Yeah, if there's one there and it's not in anybody's way, that's fine.
It's a good
They'll
nook.
Use it, or maybe somebody else will come in and use it.
Every now and then some Sinatra blasts through it during the barbecue season. But, you know.
Maybe that's what brings them back.
I think they like to swing. You know what I mean? Tom and Gardner. Tom, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for doing the show, Rich. And hello, Ray.
Hello.
I'd like to share my method of feeding birds with my fellow bird brains and then ask a question. I gave up using a bird feeder because the squirrels just kept getting at it, and only a few birds could feed at a time. So I have three old maples in the backyard, and I just scatter a few handfuls of seeds and corn under at the base of each tree, maybe twice a week. And I get all different kinds of birds, and birds that are supposed to stay in the tree and feed off the bark, like nuthatches, they'll come down and eat seeds. And the squirrels come, and on the cold winter mornings, there's just countless birds flying back and forth, and it's just a wonderful thing. So let the squirrels eat. Just throw it on the ground. So
that
my
works.
Question is...
Yep.
Yeah. And you see the interactions among all these animals, too. Anyway, my question is, how often... Am I making the birds dependent on my feeding them by feeding them?
Nah. They're just using you.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're just taking advantage
they'll
of your generosity.
They'll be fine if he stops.
Yeah. They'll fan out and find food on their own. If you want to take a few weeks to go to Florida, take the winter off.
Right.
That's fine.
But you feed a lot of birds too, right, Rich?
I do.
And everything's fine.
They're fine.
Okay.
All right, Tom. Thank you very much for the call. And let's now go to Edmund in Olive Bridge. You're up.
Hey there. Hi, good to talk to you. So I'm calling because I've been hearing a bird call all summer, and I think it's an easy one, but it has ruined nature documentaries for me.
Oh, yeah?
Ruined. So okay. The bird call goes, pee-wee.
Okay.
Is that familiar?
Yeah. It sounds like a pee-wee.
Is that
pee-wee?
Is that a pee-wee? Pee-wee? Yeah, I figured.
The bird gets its name
from that.
It's
funny because we hear them all the time, but we never see them.
No, that's hard to see. The pee-wee is a flycatcher. It's one of the flycatchers that lives in the canopy of the inner woods, sometimes to the fringe, but mainly on the inside of the woods. And they're, you know, when you're looking up with all that leafy treetops, they're hard to pick out. But the sound is very distinctive.
And the flies don't hear it?
Nope.
If they do, it does them no good.
Okay.
They got to recognize it. So
they're local, though, right? They aren't, like, globally found.
There are several different species of peewees around the New World, from Canada to the Caribbean. We have just the one species here. A little further north and in some of the higher elevations, there's another type of bird that is closely related to the peewee. That's one of the flycatchers, the olive-sided flycatcher. Out west, there's a different species that's found out there. It's called the Western Wood Peewee.
But they sound pretty much the same?
They do. There's a distinction between the two. And then if you go down into the Caribbean, there are peewees that are found in Cuba and down along the Rio Grande Valley. So there are different species.
All right, Edmund, thank you very much. And now we jump over to line 5 at John in Latham. John.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. This past spring, I had a pair of birds soaring around my yard, and my sister thinks I'm crazy, but I think they were a nesting pair of merlins.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that we have merlins in this area?
Because you know, it's fun.
On stuff I read says that they don't really nest here.
Well, you read correctly, but the books are wrong. The birds have changed the rules. They have actually become kind of like a new urban bird species.
Huh.
They used to be they were not found in New York. They were nested someplace out west or up north, but they have expanded their range and have moved into the neighborhood.
I'll be darned. What so do they look nesting, like?
They're a falcon. They're very closely related to the peregrine falcon, and they look like a miniature falcon. They just don't have the robust nature of the peregrine falcon. And back in the day, again, before PC, we used to call them pigeon hawks for a number of reasons. Their primary food were things like mourning doves and probably passenger pigeons. And nowadays, they're mainly a bird-hunting hawk, a falcon.
Yeah.
It seems to me that their behavior, they would swoop around the treetops and try to stir other birds up, and then seemed to me like they were chasing them.
Oh, sure. He was shopping for a meal, so.
Well, they also had to fight with the red-tailed hawk, but they seem to do all right. But so it is possible that merlins have nested in our area.
I know they nest in the Albany area and in the city of Albany.
Okay.
So
okay.
You're not far off there.
All right, John. Thanks a lot for the call. And why is it unpolitically correct to call them pigeon hawks?
Well, because they're more accurately a merlin.
You're not going to hurt their
merlin
feelings.
Merlin is an old world name for the species.
Yeah.
And it's kind of more correct.
Pigeons are nice.
Pitches are nice, and they probably prefer the name change, too.
All right. To Gail and Oneonta. Gail, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Yes. I was wondering about the blue jay. They're very vocal in the wintertime, but they're very quiet, it seems like, in the summertime. And I was wondering, is there some other kind of bird that keeps them so that they're more guarded in the summertime?
Well, I think, and that's a very good observation. In the summertime, they don't want to draw so much attention to themselves. And they do become quieter, more stealthful, not so much secretive. There's no way a blue jay can keep a secret. But they, when they're nesting, they become really, really quiet. And in fact, it's one of the fun things. I've had them nest right in my porch.
Yeah.
And I have the baby monitor outside. And you should hear the sweet nothings of between bluebirds. It's kind of... blue jays.
Yeah.
They have these kind of like little soft calls that they exchange as they come and go to the nest and feed the young.
Huh.
So, Yeah, but you're right about that. They are, in the wintertime, there's no stopping the noise.
All right. Thanks, Gail. I always thought blue jays were a little nasty, a little aggressive.
Well, they are.
Okay, but they still have sweet nothings.
Well, they are. You know,
quiet.
Yeah, they have their moments.
All right. Archie in Greenfield. Archie, you're on.
Hi. How you guys doing today?
Well, we're doing all right. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
All right.
Loving this cold weather. Hey, I was just wanted to offer a suggestion on the woman who called earlier questioning possibly a turkey call.
Mm-hmm.
She'd given that imitation. There is a call from the robin in the evening that sounded very close to that. I'm not sure if that would be a possibility there or not.
Very bell-like.
So just wanted to.
Yeah, I'm not buying that.
No?
No.
Not buying that.
No. The robin, and I know what you're saying, and I appreciate it. I think it's an interesting thought, but it would not, to me, would come across as a loud bell sound.
Okay.
It's a soft clucking sound.
Right.
But
Right.
And it's repetitive, but it doesn't come through as loud.
Do you think you'll do some research on this?
I definitely.
You and I, neither one of us will remember for the next show, so maybe a listener will remind you. Archie, thanks a lot. Let's go to Fran in Pittsfield. Fran, you're on.
Hi. Barnes & Noble has a bird card set.
Ah.
Oh, good.
Deck. And it's by Sibley, S-I-B-L-E-Y.
Well, there it
and
is.
If they don't have it in stock, they can order it. And I think there's another company that does that, but I don't remember. But
well, you know, Rich got his out of cigarette packs when he was a kid.
Yeah, right.
But Sibley, they make the guide to the birds.
And David Sibley is actually a remarkable illustrator, author, and identifier. And I wasn't actually aware of cards like that, but I'm glad to hear that they're out there. And as a tool for helping kids pick up on birds,
or even
flashcards. Oh, even grown-ups. And I think that's what the cigarette pack bird cards were all about.
Right, Rich.
Yeah, I give them the
good save there 30 minutes later. Well done. So if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that, Richard P. Guthrie?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. Well, there's the music. We're done. Well done.
What? Okay, ebird.org.
ebird.org with your sightings. And support comes from Carrie Haddad Gallery, Hudson, presenting A Quiet Respite, featuring painted landscapes inspired by the Hudson Valley and beyond. Opens tomorrow. Artist reception this Saturday, 5 to 7. CarrieHaddadGallery.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Kent Hicks Construction Company, featuring East Branch Homes, a new division of hybrid prefab homes that are net zero ready and low and embodied carbon, traditional to modern styles available, eastbranchhomes.com. And the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers, nature.org/Adirondacks. Well, that was a good one with Rich Guthrie today. Always a popular program. He will be back. Thanks to Rich for being here. Thank you for listening. Great calls, some great sound effects. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who endured another hour of this program. Thanks to Susie Chekai, who answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Stand by now for The Book Show.